Hey guys, this is Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I help school leaders create a winning culture, focus on the essential, and lead with courage and integrity. Today's interview is with Justin Bader. This is episode number 7, and Justin is the director of the Principal Center. I'll have a link to his website and resources in the show notes. I like to describe Justin as a Jedi of productivity and developing successful habits. He was a successful principal, and he has brought to the education space really insights to his workflow and the way that he was able to be so successful. So please connect with him. The blog and podcast was made specifically for you to help you meet your leadership potential. Get more content and resources at betterleadersbetterschools.com. Today's podcast is brought to you by audible.com. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/better. That's www.audibletrial.com/better. There's over 180,000 titles to choose from for your iPhone, Android, Kindle, or MP3 player. And now it's time for some 5-star reviews. First review comes from It's Me RD. They say, "Great podcast. I sent this to a good friend of mine who is a teacher and she loves it. Thank you for spreading the message. It's Me RD, and I'm glad your friend enjoys the podcast." Lobster45, wonderful podcast. Excellent and invaluable content that is applicable to leaders in any organization. And thank you, Lobster45. That's really the goal of mine. Now, my passion is school leaders, but I do believe that the insights and ideas shared through my website and podcast is applicable to all industries, all organizations. So thank you for those 5-star reviews. It really is a great way to thank me if you're enjoying this website and podcast. And it just, you know, it makes me feel good and special inside. So if you want that to happen, leave me a 5-star review. I'd love to feature you on the show. And speaking of the show, let's get to it.
Welcome to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast, where school leaders go to find inspiration and learn world-class strategies from top influencers in education. Better Leaders, Better Schools was created by Daniel Bauer. And now for our Bauer trivia question. Daniel's first job was selling Cutco knives door-to-door. Stay tuned. The answer will be revealed following today's amazing podcast.
So hello, this is Daniel from Better Leaders, Better Schools. I am honored and thrilled that you are listening today. Today's guest is Justin Bader, and let me tell you about him. He is the director of the Principal Center and host of Principal Center Radio. He helps school administrators transform their productivity and multiply their impact and speaks regularly at conferences and professional development events. Ladies and gents, here is Justin Bader.
Hey, Daniel. Thanks very much for the invitation.
Absolutely. I've been, when you said yes to this, I ran to my wife and I said, Justin's going to be on the show. This is the best. And I've been looking forward to this for so long. So thanks again for being here.
No, so, my pleasure.
Awesome. So jumping into the questions, how'd you get into education? What inspired you to pursue a career in education?
Well, I think in college, I had bounced around to a couple different majors, economics and science, and discovered that, the need was there for science teachers. I think I was probably the only person who graduated in the state with my particular certification. Okay. And this is a time when, just looking at what the different options were, really liked the idea of teaching, had a good experience in school, and seemed like a good thing. I honestly didn't know what I was getting into at the time. You know, I don't think any of us do. We think right. We do, but worked out well and got a job with Seattle Public Schools, which is where I wanted to end up. My wife and I moved out there right after college and was with Seattle Public Schools for 10 years as a teacher and then ultimately as a principal.
And then you switched from that position as a principal in Seattle and then launched the Principal Center Radio. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the Principal Center came out of a desire to connect with other school leaders online, and we had a kind of a Ning social network site for a while and tried a couple different things, and ultimately turned into a full-fledged business and consulting practice, starting with some iPad trainings that I did, building on some popularity of the iPad at NAESP. Had the good fortune to present there a couple of times and launch that into an online course. And then we've since moved into productivity and instructional leadership. And that's what we do now. So 3 years later, here we are.
Absolutely. And I want to tell the family listening, you know, to the show that, you know, I'm on Justin's email newsletter. Great content there. I've sat in a number of his webinars. And I really believe that what he's offering school leaders is high quality and top notch. Really encourage you to check that out. Now, I haven't actually accepted the challenge. I think I've seen this on your site. Maybe it's the 21-day challenge. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, so the 21-day Instructional Leadership Challenge, which is just instructionalleadershipchallenge.com, is a free program that we created to really get at the behavioral level of instructional leadership. And I think we all have in our heads what instructional leadership is supposed to entail and what it's supposed to look like. But when it comes right down to it, it's very difficult to make the big things happen in your school, whatever your priorities are, without the information that you get from being in classrooms and without the influence that you get from being in classrooms. And if you ask the average administrator, you know, do you do walkthroughs? Do you get into classrooms? Everybody says yes, right? Mm-hmm. We all say yes. We all do that, right? But if you ask teachers how often they get feedback from their administrators, you get a very different answer. And you think, well, where's the gap here? Where's the mismatch? And I think the mismatch is between our intentions and our behavior. So the challenge is designed to get people actually into classrooms. And my rule of thumb is 10% of your classrooms every day or every classroom once every 2 weeks. And for most people, that means they do about 3 walkthroughs a day and they can get to everybody, you know, 16, 18 times a year over the course of a 36-week school year. And for the people who do that, they're, you know, I would say an order of magnitude more in classrooms than the average person. So it's been exciting. We have right now, as we're recording this, 3,500 people from 50 countries who've been through the challenge, which just blows my mind that there are people, you know, who've signed up from 50 different countries.
Right.
But it's exciting. You know, we've got one of the first questions we ask is, what's your definition of instructional leadership? And then we ask, how did you exercise that? And just to read through those is really neat to hear from people all over the world how they exercise instructional leadership. So that's been a lot of fun. It's a totally free program. And you can also check that out through our app, which is just called the Principal Center. We have all the videos from the challenge in there. But the videos are not the point. The point is getting into classrooms and leaving great feedback for teachers and just learning what's going on in classrooms.
So the app, is that available on iPhone and Android?
It is, yeah. Yeah, if you just search for the Principal Center, or you can go to principalcenter.com/app, and we'll take you to the appropriate link.
Okay, and the challenge was instructionalleadershipchallenge.com, correct? Yep. Great. Yeah, I highly encourage everybody to do that. You ask everybody what their definition of instructional leadership is. How would you define it?
Well, I get to kind of play you know, play the questioner most of the time. So you're flipping the tables on me. I think it comes down. Good question. Yeah, I think it comes down to decision making for the most part. That, you know, as instructional leaders, you know, every school has a different division of labor, and in some schools there are coaches who do a lot of the teacher coaching and feedback, and in other schools it's really just a few teachers and a principal who also, you know, is the transportation director. You know, the work varies so much. But I think what all administrators have in common is that we're called upon to make decisions constantly. Little decisions, medium-sized decisions, huge decisions. And we kind of have to guide the ship based on good information. Mm-hmm. And if we're to be instructional leaders, you know, a lot of the decisions we're making are not directly instructional decisions. They're operational, they're personnel, they're all these different things that connect to instruction. But what they have in common is that we need good information to make those decisions. And I believe that the best information for us comes from classrooms. And there's this idea in Toyota, in the Toyota production system, that if you're going to be an effective manager, you don't just get to sit up in the glass booth overlooking the factory floor and decide what needs to be done. You go down to the shop floor where the actual work is being done. You talk to the people who are doing the work rather than just kind of telling them what to do and deciding what they should do. And I think it's through that conversation, through that presence, through that seeing and hearing and listening that we actually get the information we need to make good decisions and to be good stewards of the decision-making process. Because I certainly think that, you know, that those decisions have to be made inclusively and made with broad input and broad buy-in. And that's not a process that happens on its own. You know, we have to guide that process. So that's not a very concise definition, but that's kind of my framework for instructional leadership, that it's largely about decision making and making sure that we're getting the information we need and getting the information that other people need to make decisions.
And I love the emphasis of just getting in classrooms as much as possible and tying that back to the 21-day challenge. You know, 10% of classes are one per day, I think you said, or something like that. But the emphasis, get in the classrooms, work with your teachers, provide feedback, and close that gap of what you think you're doing and what teachers actually need to help them develop. You know, the past 2 days I've spent at something called the Global Leadership Summit. And it's this two-day just world-class conference on leadership development. And one of the things you said about the Toyota manager reminded me of a breakout session I had led by Ed Catmull, who helped found Pixar. And he had so many just nuggets of wisdom for leaders. But one of the things that really struck me is to be able to develop the beautiful movies that Pixar and Disney create. They send their teams out to actually get immersed into the environments they create. So for Ratatouille, I did not see that one, but you know, they went to French restaurants and enjoyed the cuisine. Finding Nemo, I'm a big fan of that movie. They actually went scuba diving off of the coast of Australia, but they also visited a sewage plant in Australia to know if a fish could even make it through, you know, all the inner workings there. For the Bug's Life, they got down on the ground to see what it looked like from, you know, a bug's perspective. And that's what you're saying it takes, you know, for a manager, a leader in a school, get immersed in that environment, know what the teachers are experiencing, and provide that high quality feedback. That's just great. And again, I encourage everybody to sign up for instructionalleadershipchallenge.com. Go there today and sign up for that. So Justin, can you talk a little bit about your leadership style and how it has evolved from being a principal 10 years in Seattle to now the amazing director of the Principal Center?
Sure. So I would say my leadership style is definitely one to kind of sit back and take stock. I'm not a kind of charge in kind of person. And, you know, I think each style has its strengths. And I think, you know, there's a situational aspect to just about anything. I mean, any of us who are in a, you know, an emergency situation or something that clearly needs an immediate change are going to act differently than if we're doing something that's a little bit more long term. But, you know, to get back to that idea of decision making, I realized right away as a new elementary principal, having not taught elementary school, which I think happens, you know, to a lot of people, we're leading at a different level than we taught.
Sure.
I think that really heightens the importance of listening and of kind of figuring out, you know, where the strengths are and where the expertise is, and making sure that that expertise is represented in the decisions that we're making. And, you know, a great example is, you know, figuring out which teachers are, you know, going to give you good information and how you can draw on that. And I think of, you know, kindergarten teachers. I mean, I had taught kindergarten for a grand total of one day when I started as a principal. We had a sub that didn't show up one time when I was an assistant principal, and I got to teach kindergarten for a day, and that gave me some perspective, but, you know, not enough. So I needed to really be intentional about listening and about involving people, even if, you know, even if they weren't sure how they wanted to be involved, you know, I knew that was essential. So I really think listening is at the heart of every kind of leadership, but especially instructional leadership, because there's just so much for us to, you know, to become aware of that it has to start with listening.
Yeah, that the idea of being present and really, you know, listening and not trying to form, you know, your rebuttal or answer, you know, in a dialogue and when you're asking questions is so important. Did you learn that lesson from any specific mentor, or how did you come to that insight into the importance of listening and leadership?
I don't know. I think for me it was partially a social thing. I mean, I'm a person who you know, gets comfortable around other people, you know, after not too long, but I always come in kind of quiet and kind of listening, and that's okay. I think that's just my temperament. And it, you know, it kind of became a leadership behavior when I became a school leader. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
So this is, I already prepped you on this. One of my favorite questions is to know what's been your worst leadership mistake and what did you learn from that?
Worst leadership mistake. Well, I can think of the, you know, one of the toughest decisions we made as a school that that just did not go my way, or did not go the way that, you know, that I think everyone thought it would and should. We had a big curriculum adoption decision to make. You know, we were going to switch to this new curriculum. It was going to be great. We've been talking about it for, I mean, for years, literally, since before I had been there. Many teachers had been trained and, you know, everybody, you know, thought we were ready. But everybody also thought there were some people who weren't ready. And nobody thought that they personally weren't ready. So everybody was confident that this was going to go great. So we just said, okay, we'll take a vote. And as long as, you know, 90% of our staff is on board or something like that, we'll go for it. Well, we had the vote and enough people said, I don't think my colleagues are ready. Nobody would admit to not being ready themselves,
right.
But everyone, enough people said, I don't think my colleagues are ready, that it didn't pass. And I was stunned. And I realized that what I had done wrong was that I had framed the decision in a way that was very unlikely to succeed. And I realized there was nothing that required us to set that criteria for making that decision. There was nothing that said we had to have a vote. There was nothing that said it had to be a 90% vote. That was just kind of, you know, what we assumed would work. Mm. And those assumptions really were pretty far off from reality. And as a result, it kind of set us back about a year in officially making that switch. And to make matters worse, I panicked after, you know, after it failed. And I said, hey, you know, maybe we shouldn't have voted. Maybe we should have, you know, done it more of a consensus process or just a simple majority, you know. And I was kind of, I didn't know what to do. I was kind of scrambling to react to this this failed vote. And I think in doing that, people said, wait a minute, Justin, you've got to, you know, you've got to respect the process that we put in place. And I said, you're right. You know, we said we would vote. We said these were the criteria. And we said, if we don't hit those criteria, we're not going to do it this year. So you're right. We need to respect that. So that's what we did. And ultimately came up with a different process for the following year that was much less of an impossible standard. And, you know, and ultimately is, I think, a pretty big success. But I think the big thing that I learned from that was that how we frame things for our staff matters a great deal. And like I said, this was totally a mistake of framing. I think people were ready, but setting up this kind of impossible standard for how we would commit, you know, and I think we do that a lot with any decision where we really want people to be on board. But we can't assume that people are on board the moment that the ship starts to sail. I think that happens along the way. And I think people, there's this old idea I learned from, you know, from another lifetime ago, really, that people believe what they do much better than they do what they believe. And that behavioral level has really stuck with me, that, you know, if you just ask people to commit to something and then follow through, that's actually going to be a lot harder than asking people to do something and then commit to it. And I think that kind of reflects the mistake that I made early on in that curriculum vote.
I don't know if that's like just experience is the best type of teacher, you know, before getting too much in your own head or what that is. But that is so powerful. I love what you said there. How we frame things matters a great deal. So knowing what you know now, what would you tell yourself as a novice principal?
Well, one thing that I would tell myself is advice that I repeated today in a webinar. I think We all have these perceptions of how we are, and I think we've probably experienced that in the classroom as well. One thing I wish I had done from the very beginning is take more video of meetings that I was leading, of just myself in conversation with people. You know, if I ask a teacher who I know will be comfortable with it, hey, do you mind if we do our post-conference and I record it so I can kind of see how I did in terms of leading this conversation? And just being able to gain that level of self-awareness, because that... you know, being able to see yourself in action, I think, is very powerful. And we're encouraging leaders to do that in another free program that we've got going on now called the Professional Collaboration Challenge, that's designed to get teachers looking at film of themselves in the classroom and ultimately sharing that with their peers to, you know, to exchange ideas and to get feedback for improvement. But I think it has to begin with leaders. It has to begin with the modeling that we do. And we have a ton to learn from that, because I think so often people are hesitant to give us feedback because we didn't ask for it or because we're in a position of authority. So I think we really need to be intentional about putting ourselves in a position to get feedback, but also actually seeing how we're doing on film. It's not something that, you know, that you hear a lot of people advocating for, you know, film yourself leading a meeting, but I think it's a powerful strategy for just becoming more aware of how you lead. And it, you know, to answer your question, I think the reason I would identify that as something is, you know, people would come up to me and say, "Justin, you need to smile more." And I would think, "Really? I feel like I smile all the time, don't I?" They'd say, like, what face am I making right now? And they would give me kind of a grumpy face, and I'd say, "Oh, I thought I was smiling." And, you know, just the perception that we have in our heads is not always the perception that that other people form based on what they see. So.
Yeah, I know yesterday Bill Hybels was talking about leadership lessons that he's learned. And one of the main things that he was talking about is just the blind spots that we naturally have, right, as individuals. And you need to have a group of trusted peers, right, to be able to give you that feedback. People that you know are for you. That you've developed a ton of trust with, that can tell you exactly how it is, because we all have those blind spots. And he shared this story of it wasn't his smile, it was his attitude, right? And so he'd walk around, and he shared how the window washer was, he was washing windows fine, and he was whistling, and somebody had recently told him that it wasn't happy unless people were overworked, were working as hard or too hard like he was. And that whistling almost set him off. And for the first time in years, decades, the blind spot really was hit home for him. And why, you know, why would he get upset at just a simple window washer whistling, right? And there was that own blind spot that was really... probably limiting his leadership capacity. But I love that idea of video is absolutely brilliant. You know, when I coached basketball, the way we improved our defense efficiency, same thing on offense, is we watched game film, right? And all the pro teams do it, you know, high school, college, everybody does it, because you can't, the video is not going to lie. So, right. You know, if you need to smile more, it's going to show that you're scowling or whatever. But the type of feedback you give, everything is going to be captured on that video. I think that's absolutely brilliant. And so that was the professional collaboration challenge. Where can people sign up to be a part of that?
Yeah, that one's just at principalcenter.com/collaboration. So. And we did that with a company called SIBME, and my friend Dave Wakefield made up the name SIBME based on the idea that seeing is believing. You know, that idea that, you know, film doesn't lie. You know, you actually get to see what's happening in your own practice or what's happening in your colleague's practice. And it's hugely valuable for growth.
Yeah, because I know the best type of feedback sessions I've worked with teachers is definitely when you lead them through that self-reflection process, where they're really answering and bringing up the ideas and areas of improvement that they self-select that they need to work on. And video is just another tool and a very effective tool to get people to go through that reflective process. So I love it. And I hope people sign up. principalcenter.com/collaboration, right?
Right.
Great. So let me ask you this. We live in a pretty busy world, and principals have a lot on their plates. So how did you and how do you currently avoid distractions and stay focused? Do you have some sort of framework or boundaries or system that helps you execute on a daily basis?
Wow, great question. Yeah. I think the boundaries piece has to be the starting point. And that sounds strange, because boundaries feel like kind of a cheat if we say, well, there are boundaries on how much I'm going to work. You know, I'm going to work this many hours, or I'm going to go home at this time, or I'm not going to check email on Saturday, or whatever, you know, whatever your kind of personal boundaries are. That feels like we're holding back and not giving 100% to our work. But I think it's actually really critical for making the best use of our time, because if we just kind of let things leak into every moment and, you know, we're answering emails at all hours and never really unplugging, I think that can make us less careful about what we allow onto our agenda, what we allow onto our to-do list, and it can make us use our time less effectively. So I think having clear boundaries for yourself and, you know, and saying, you know, and for me, it would come down to, you know, I need to be home by this time. I'm just going to do it, or I'm going to miss, you know, the day with my kids or whatever. And that's important to me. So that's going to be the boundary. And when you have that boundary in place, I think a neat thing happens. And it's kind of the reverse of this idea of Parkinson's law. If you heard Parkinson's law, that work expands to fill the available time.
I know it all too well in our meetings at times. So yes.
Yeah, absolutely. If you have an hour, whatever you were going to discuss is going to take an hour.
Right.
And if you have half an hour, hey, guess what? Sometimes you can get that same work done in half an hour. And I think the way we can kind of turn that around and use that to our advantage in productivity and to, you know, just to get more done in less time is to have benchmarks for ourselves and to have little goals and to say like, okay, I've got 10 minutes until lunch duty. So I've got to go on lunch duty. I know I've got some voicemails that I need to check. I'm going to try to knock out all of those voicemails and all of those phone calls in the next 10 minutes. And that sounds a little bit ridiculous if you think, well, some of those phone calls can be 10 minutes by themselves. But when you give yourself that constraint, creativity kicks in. Yeah. And I think, you know, we have to use more of our own creativity and leadership. And sometimes we feel like, you know, this is a duty-driven job, but I think it's also a hugely creative job to be a school leader. And I think that's where a lot of the difference between good and great comes from is when we can bring our creativity to the work and figure out, you know, how are we going to pull it off in the time that we have available and not just make an infinite amount of time available, but really say, okay, this is the deadline. I'm going to get this done, and then I'm going to move on to something else. So that's kind of the starting point for me.
Love it. So, you know, boundaries in terms of being able to execute, you know, at work and get down the different tasks, the demands of the job, those are important. But what were some boundaries that work for you and what works for you now as a director of Principal Center to help balance work, life, and family?
Yeah, well, I have the same thing. I have the commitment that I'll stop working at a certain time and, you know, I can expect a text from my wife if I'm still at my desk when that time rolls around.
Yeah.
So I know that, you know, I'm gonna quit working at 5 and I'm not going to get back on the computer until the kids are in bed. And, you know, just those specific times a day when, you know, when I'm not working kind of create that boundary for me. And then just knowing that we, you know, we've got to make events happen. We've got to get a webinar put on. We've got to be ready for that when it happens. We've got to get the tweets out about the webinar and all sure. those things. You know, I feel like having that some sort of external accountability is really critical for me. Just to know that other people are counting on whatever work I'm going to do. And that's what drives me to get those specific things done.
So when you say external accountability, is that you're saying the people that are counting you, the principals that you serve? Or right. do you actually have a group that checks in with you to make sure you're meeting your deadlines and stuff?
Well, I think both can be really helpful. And I've had some great groups that I've worked with just on kind of a personal level to, you know, to share goals and to, you know, to follow through on those goals and to check in and say, how did you do on that goal last week? You said you're going to do this. Did you do it? So I think that idea of kind of a peer group of people who can hold you accountable and push you to higher levels, I think is really powerful.
So let me ask you this. When you're not running the Principal Center, what do you do for fun?
Well, I like to get out and hike, and my kids are currently 2 and 4, so they're getting to the age where they can kind of participate in that. We had some kind of 5-minute hikes in the early years where you get on the trail and then nope, it's over. But love to get outdoors and get into the parks and hike, things like that. We've got a nice little trail that goes around the mountain in town here, and just love to be outside. Yeah.
What's one book every principal should read right now, and why should they read it?
Ooh, boy, that's a great question. I talk to a lot of really smart people on Principal Center Radio, so I'm going to have to look at my shelf here.
Love it.
I'm going to say one book that I think is really fascinating is The Power of Habit by Charles Duhigg, and that actually became the basis for part of the basis for the high performance triangle and my understanding of you know, of kind of where high performance comes from, whether it's in an organization or in our work or in our personal lives. You know, habits drive so much of what we do. So The Power of Habit is a great book. You can get it on Audible as well if you prefer to listen. But yeah, Charles Duhigg, The Power of Habit. is one that I would highly recommend. And it's outside the education world, but most of what I read is.
No, yeah, I think that's so smart to go out other industries and, you know, take their lessons, apply it to the educational sphere, and just glean off their knowledge. We'll link up The Power of Habit in the show notes, so if people are interested and want to go to the website, purchase it, they can do that. So is there a tech resource that you leverage to be super effective at work? I know a lot of your webinars, I've seen you talk about things such as Evernote, but what would be your favorite tech resource?
I have to say I am a big fan. I use a ton of technology tools and recommend a ton of them. I have to say one that I think is underappreciated because it has so much under the hood that you can do is Google Calendar. And people tend to just kind of use whatever calendar comes with their device or their operating system. But Google Calendar is an amazing tool because it connects to everything else. And we scheduled this interview probably through some connection to Google Calendar, yep. Maybe on both ends, and didn't have to do all this back and forth. Hey, when can you meet? Can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do this? Can you do that? That can save so much email for principals. I went back and counted my worst ever scheduling email thread for an IEP meeting.
Don't tell me.
My worst ever. I think there had to be like 13 people at this meeting, like doctors and assessment specialists. I mean, it was a big deal. But we had 19 emails to schedule this one meeting. And I thought, this is nuts. So anytime we can use tools like Doodle or tools like Google Calendar, I personally use a service called Schedule Once. And I think you probably use a service, TimeTrade?
Calendly.
Calendly, yeah.
Yep.
There are all these services that will connect to your Google Calendar. And slowly Outlook is getting more support too. But I think Google Calendar is really the killer now, just in terms of huge time savers for administrators.
Absolutely. And what I love about Calendly and connecting to Google Calendar, you know, you throw on there when your observations are, lunch duty, whatever you're doing. I even had that connected to my personal calendar. But then in my signature to all my students, teachers, and parents, it says, click here to schedule a 10-minute chat on the phone. Click here for a 30-minute meeting if they need it. And, nice. You know, it's just one way of cutting out the back and forth and, you know, being inefficient, wasting a lot of time there, but also just a great way to serve, you know, our staff and our community to say, I want to meet with you. Here's the times I'm available, and just gives them, just kind of shifts the power a little bit, you know, and I do appreciate that with Calendly. It's pretty inexpensive. I'm sure Schedule Once has a free and a paid for version, and definitely encourage principals to go and check that out. Yeah. Before we talk about that big question about how you build a school, you know, I've heard a lot of just the great resources you offer through webinars, through the 21-day challenge, the professional collaboration challenge. Can you talk a little bit about some of the paid-for services you offer as well?
Sure. So our probably most popular program right now, just in terms of getting new people on board, is called High Performance Habits. And there's that idea of habits again. That program focuses directly on productivity and some of the technology tools that I recommend. So we've got a whole thing on Google Apps for Education and Evernote and Todoist and a lot of different apps that I recommend for productivity. And that's a program that people can sign up for on an annual or a monthly basis. It's pretty cheap, so we've got a ton there. And that's actually a subset of our flagship program, which is more about building capacity for instructional leadership. And that flagship program is called the High Performance Instructional Leadership Network. And those are both on our website at principalcenter.com. And that one is more in the, you know, kind of master's degree level in terms of the amount of content. They're, you know, we're not asking people to write papers, but we do want to have a big impact on practice. And we want to help school leaders make a big dent in the instructional leadership capacity of their school. So that's really the focus of the big program.
Okay, so people can enter with the High Performance Habits at your website, principalcenter.com. And then those that are looking for more meat, more content, High Performance Instructional Leadership Network.
Definitely. Exactly, yeah. And that latter program, we're actually expanding it so that if you buy it for yourself, you're actually covering your entire school, because we want those leadership resources to really be resources for you to pass on to your staff and even your students.
Wow, that's incredible value. So everybody, definitely encourage you to check those out. Sign up tomorrow for sure. Let me ask you this. You're building a school from the ground up. You're not limited by a budget. Your only limitation is your imagination. How would you create the school if you're given a blank slate and unlimited resources? And what would your top three priorities be building the school?
Oh man, that could be a fun one. So I think one of the first things that I would do is I would look for the key people, you know, the people that I've always wanted to work with. You know, maybe you've got a friend that you went to school with who, you know, you've always had these great professional conversations with, but you've never, you know, really had the chance to work together. So I would poach mercilessly from the best people that I knew. And maybe that's where I'd use some of those unlimited resources. But I think even if we had average resources, I would start there. And I would love to see, and I'm sure these schools exist, and I would love to talk to people who work in these schools. I would love to see a model where we're not all teaching in parallel in separate boxes, and not everybody has the same job. I think we do a big disservice to our students by making teaching just one job. And if you're one day from retirement, you have exactly the same job as you do your first day of teaching when you step into the classroom. We don't have any kind of real apprenticeship system. You know, interns, you know, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about when we induct people into the profession. I think we really need career ladders where there are teaching jobs with less responsibility that don't require the same level of expertise, but that give people the chance to develop that expertise. And there are other jobs that are kind of in the middle and other jobs that are, you know, crucial leadership positions because, you know, honestly, teaching is a really, really hard job. And I would love to see some differentiation. And I think one of the challenges that we have in the profession right now is that everybody is supposed to have the same job. And what that means is that people just do vastly different in terms of how well they fulfill that job. You know, and if I think about my first year of teaching, I was pretty terrible my first year of teaching. I should have had less responsibility. I should have, you know, worked just as hard, certainly. But it would have been terrific to work with a master teacher who could kind of make sure I was doing, you know, doing smart things and kind of intervene when I didn't and really, you know, take more responsibility. And honestly, if I had a person like that, they should have made twice as much money as me. So I think that would be part of how I would design it. And ultimately, you know, we'd all love to be in schools where everybody is a master teacher. But, you know, if money is no object, maybe we can do that. But I think I would love to see just some new models for how we staff schools, for how we make responsibility for students, not my class versus your class, but make it more of a collective approach. Because I think we all have different strengths. You know, even if we're at the similar places in our career, there are things that that you're good at that I'm not, that, you know, we can take advantage of the division of labor. I'm an organizational scholar, and I think the division of labor is something that that is interesting to me that we don't really talk about enough in schools because we just kind of take it for granted. So I would really look at that not only from the perspective of taking advantage of the talents that exceptional people that we could poach could bring in, but just to, you know, how we could kind of optimize what we're doing.
You know, I want to stay there just for a second and see, was there anything you would do with your staff or your current staff by latching on? And how would you go about identifying people's strengths? And then what would you do to help accelerate, I guess, their development, if anything?
Good question. Well, I think there's kind of a dynamic that we need to be aware of when it comes to strengths, and that is that work flows to the competent. And often the most competent people end up with the most work to do that they don't necessarily need to be doing. Mm-hmm. So I think one thing that we can do is look for things that that are not the best use of people's times, even if they're not complaining about them, and say, hey, you know, you're doing a great job of this, but I know you've got a lot on your plate. So let's kind of reconfigure how that's working or who's doing that. Because I think too often we burn our best people out.
Yeah,
but because they just naturally end up with way too much to do, and I've seen that happen across all job categories.
Yeah, I don't know if that's something that was just genetic for you or some skill you've built over time, but you definitely seem to have the habit of having strong boundaries. And one thing that I learn at any leadership conference I go to, you know, the culture of the building, the values of the building, it all starts with the leader. And what I hear you saying there is knowing your people so well that you can identify this is not the best use of your time. And that conversation might be hard to have with a peer, but to say, I appreciate you, I value what you did for the school and the community here, but I need you to put your weight and your talents and strengths in this area. And kudos to you for having those strong boundaries and being able to help others develop them as well. So Justin, you know, just wrapping up, I really want to thank you so much for being a part of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. I think what you're doing with Principal Center is incredible. You know, we're going to link up your website in the show notes and try to drive people there. I hope people do sign up for your free resources and even check out the paid for services as well. Do you have any parting words of advice for the listeners, and what's the best way to get a hold of you?
So the best way to get a hold of me is through my website, principalcenter.com, and I'm on Twitter at eduleadership, E-D-U leadership. And I think my parting word of advice would be to read everything that Daniel writes. And honestly, I don't know how you do it, but you've got quite the schedule going in terms of articles, and I've just been really impressed since I've been on your mailing list. So I know it's possible for people to come across your podcast and not be on your mailing list, but I would not recommend it. I would highly recommend getting on that Better Leaders, Better Schools mailing list and paying close attention to it.
I did not see that coming. I wish everybody could see me blushing so badly right now. I am so red. Thank you. That was quite an honor. Really appreciate it. But thanks for your time, Justin, and appreciate everything you do.
No, it's been a lot of fun. Thank you so much for the invitation, and thanks for the work you're doing at Better Leaders, Better Schools.
Thanks again for tuning into episode 7 of the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. I hope you enjoyed that interview with Justin Bader. I really enjoyed talking to him, and I so admire everything that he's doing in the online space of supporting school leaders, helping them be their best, helping increase their capacity and accelerate their leadership growth. I hope you check out his free, valuable content. He has a regular blog at theprincipalcenter.com, but he also has just some other great free offers, like the Professional Collaboration Challenge, which you can go to and get on principalcenter.com/collaboration. And another favorite of mine, the 21-Day Leadership Challenge. So check that out at instructionalleadershipchallenge.com. If you liked what you heard about the Global Leadership Summit, that was a 2-day action-packed conference of the highest quality of leadership training that you can get. I've gone for 6 years to this conference. It's always the first week in August, and I learned so much. I schedule my summers around this event, and when I leave, I am exhausted because my mind is just swimming with ideas and the potential, the possibility of what the next school year brings. I really hope that you can make the conference one day, and I'd love to go with you and then just hang out and be able to chat about what you learned. But if you weren't able to go this year, don't worry. I wrote a report. It's called the Global Leadership Summit Report. It is a one-pager per speaker, and I just took a copious amount of notes, distilled it down to the most important information, and I just wanted to offer that to you and check it out. You can go to betterleadersbetterschools.com/report15 and reserve your copy of the report. I have a free gift for everybody that tunes into the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. It's called the 15 Phrases of an Effective Leader. These are 15 phrases that have served me really well as a leader in the different roles that I've had. So if you text the word phrases, P-H-R-A-S-E-S, to 33444, that's phrases to 33444, I'll instantly deliver to your email inbox an MP3. It's less than 10 minutes long. And actually, people are using it as professional development with their executive or administrative teams and just talking about what these phrases mean to them. I didn't know that people would actually use that as a professional development tool, but I welcome the use of it in that way. I want you to get it. Again, it's free. Text the word phrases to 33444. And the answer to today's trivia question is false. No, I did not sell Cutco knives. I was a comic book inventory counter. Never had a title, but my first official paid job was counting inventory of comic books at the finest comic book shop in Palatine, Illinois, Fat Dutchie's Comic Book Shop. It was there that my imagination really exploded and my love for learning also took off. And I would help the store owner just count all the comic books. And that way he was able to determine a couple months down the road what books he should order more of or less of. And he bought all my comics. He would buy my lunches and give me a little bit of cash too from my pocket. So I'm always grateful to Chuck. Chuck, if you're listening, owner of Fat Dutchie's Comic Book Shop, really appreciate you. It was a great first job a young man could have. Thanks again for tuning in to the Better Leaders, Better Schools podcast. See you the same better place and the same better time.